Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Well, as you know, on Open House, we take a pretty active interest in human rights issues around the world. And we just love being able to tell you about progressing the issue about doing away with modern slavery. The Australian government, as you know, is considering a Modern Slavery Act. And at the moment, they're taking submissions, the Parliament is, on just what that act should look like. Draft legislation was tabled just before the winter recess, and comments are flowing in. Last week it was the turn of the Human Rights Watch to make their submission to the Senate inquiry, and the head of Human Rights Watch Australia is Elaine Pearson. Welcome back, Elaine.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, what was the tenor of your modern slavery bill submission?
Well, look, I mean, firstly, I think we have to give credit where credit is due to the government. And so, you know, it's a very good step that the government is finally addressing modern slavery. And the process so far has been very consultative. It's involved civil society and businesses. There's been various opportunities to make submissions, not only on the draft bill, but also previously. But now in examining the language that has been put forward in the draft bill, we are certainly concerned that it falls short in a few key areas. So firstly, you know, one of the concerns that we have is that there's no legal consequences for companies who fail to comply with the law.
Mm.
So this law is really about...
It's sort of about naming and shaming, isn't it?
It is. I mean, this law is really about holding companies to account for abuses that occur within their supply chain. So it requires companies to report if they have an annual revenue of $100 million or more per year. But there's no penalties for non-compliance. We also think that that $100 million or more per year is very high. And so we think that actually, you know, a more reasonable amount would be $25 million or more, which is in line with the Australian Corporations Act.
Would you accept that the easy approach, where you set up a system whereby people are encouraged to report, and let's make no bones about it, it's actually going to be a difficult task to go right through the supply chain, but you at least get the argument started. And they report to a commissioner, and if they are reporting that there is slavery in their chain, you don't think that's going to play very well with their customers. So isn't that going to be an effective break on poor practice?
I mean, look, I think it is an important first step. But I think what will happen in practice if there's no penalties is that you will get all the sort of good companies who are concerned, who are worried about their consumers, that will be complying with the law. But because there's no penalty for non-compliance, the bad companies that aren't complying won't report. So that's why I think if you actually find companies that didn't report, you know, that would be an important incentive to require them to comply.
Yeah.
And look, corporations have also been pretty behind having a Modern Slavery Act. So I think it's important to remember that the demand for this is not just coming from civil society, it's also coming from business.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The Law Council of Australia agrees with the approach you're taking. We spoke with them a few weeks ago on this program. Well, as you say, let's give credit where it's due. This could be a very good thing. Australia will still be one of the few countries in the G20 if the Act actually gets through in any form, and then we can work on improving it. Now, Elaine, we wanted to talk to you, Human Rights Watch, about the elections in Cambodia. Today is the national election in Cambodia. It happens, the last time it happened was about 5 years ago from memory. And it's been a very controversial election, so controversial that Australia declined to send an official observer team to the election. What does Human Rights Watch say about today's election in Cambodia?
Well, this is really a sham election because there's really only one party that's taking part, which is the ruling party, the Cambodian People's Party. There's a couple of sort of small minor parties, but they're unlikely to gain many seats. The main opposition party has been dissolved. Its leader has been thrown into prison. Its other leader is in exile. All of the members of that party have been banned from politics for 5 years. And this happened in November of last year, alongside, you know, really a crackdown on civil society, on opposition politicians, but also on the media. So, you know, I think Hun Sen was really a bit freaked out with what happened last time around, five years ago.
Yes.
And I think he didn't want to leave anything to chance this time.
The problem then, though, Elaine, wasn't it that some of the opposition figures, perhaps understandably, in their frustration, I don't know, were doing things like urging a boycott. Some of them were urging civil disobedience, which seemed to play into the hand of the government, which was saying, you see, they're only about causing trouble.
Well, I mean, voting in elections isn't mandatory, so I don't think they're necessarily doing anything wrong by suggesting a boycott. I think for the opposition, they're very frustrated. You know, quite a number of them have been forced into exile. They can't go back to Cambodia. And, you know, since they can't actually participate in the elections, I think they feel like this is the only way that they can make, you know, their message across. I mean, I think for a lot of Cambodians, though, you know, the reality is they're very afraid. They also have the need to survive. They've been told by a number of government officials all the way from the top that failure to vote is, you know, if you fail to vote, you'll be considered a traitor.
Well, so people have been fined in the last 24 hours. Yeah, people have been fined, I've noticed, for going to vote, then not inking their finger. In fact, not voting, and then posting pictures on Facebook of their non-inked finger. They've now been fined.
Well, exactly. And I mean, these sorts of things, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, Cambodia isn't a country that has a mandatory voting system. What we have also noticed is that we've seen that there's been heavy security personnel posted around a lot of these voting booths. Yeah. So the atmosphere is very intimidating for people.
Yeah. The government will be returned. It'll get a very strong majority. As you say, most of the candidates are actually government candidates. There's very little opposition, no official opposition as such. Do things die down in Cambodia after that, or by suppressing the main opposition party, has the government just going to see discontent being fermented?
Well, I mean, I think you know, a lot of people are very unhappy about what's happening in Cambodia, and they're frustrated that they can't participate in the political system anymore. So I think, you know, people are going to find other avenues to speak up. And I think you can see that happening right now, particularly on social media channels like Facebook and so on. But I think, you know, with Hun Sen, you know, he's really made this calculation that, you know, getting a lot of funding now from China, the Chinese government, you know, doesn't really care very much about whether the Cambodian government has, you know, legitimate elections or not.
Yes.
So, you know, he's really, you know, decided to move on this path towards authoritarian rule. And I think it is up to other governments like Australia, like the US and the EU, really to take a strong stance and, you know, frankly, not to recognise the legitimacy of these elections and to speak up about the very serious problems in having an election where the main opposition party can't even participate.
Yes, that will be a question for the government over the next few weeks. Now, from Human Rights Watch, Elaine Pearson is with us. What did your organisation make of the elections in Pakistan? Imran Khan elected as predicted?
You know, our concern in Pakistan remains the role and influence of the military, and that, you know, this has always had, you know, an outsided role, and any civilian leader, you know, really needs to grapple with the military's control in the country. And I think that will be a major issue for Imran Khan going forward.
Incredibly important, given Al-Qaeda and its offshoots have, you know, often been based right there in Pakistan. So incredibly important to the rest of the world that we have order in that country. Finally, the Philippines. I know that Human Rights Watch has been extremely concerned about, and we've spoken with you before, about the war on drugs. What, 12,000 Filipinos dead so far, and most of those extrajudicial? Is that correct?
That's right. I mean, we know of at least 12,000. I mean, the government has actually stopped reporting the figures, so it could be much higher than that, but that's in the last 2 years since Duterte took office. We know that of those 12,000 killings, about 4,500 are by police, and the rest are by unidentified gunmen. But, you know, often these people are basically agents of the police. We have documented how these are basically routine executions. They occur in, you know, the slum areas of cities like Manila, Cebu and other cities. And often what we found is that evidence is planted to justify the killings. So they claim that, you know, these killings were in self-defense. They plant drugs, they plant weapons. But the reality is these are cold-blooded executions.
We've seen a number of priests killed.
Yes, I mean, the drug war has really, you know, taken in a lot of people have gotten caught in the crossfire. There's also been children who've been caught up in this. And I think this is what happens when you give a license to kill to policemen and to others, that, you know, people are a fair game. And I think, you know, the concerning thing has been also the statements from the top and really the campaign of intimidation against anyone who speaks out against these killings in the Philippines. So, you know, former Senator Leyla de Lima is still in a jail cell in the Philippines because she was the most vocal critic of the drug war and who had actually launched a Senate inquiry into the legality of these killings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that sends a very strong message to people not to speak up on this issue in the Philippines.
Well, Elaine, thank you for running through those current issues with us tonight. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, no problem.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.